This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Jürgen Van Het Bulscher. He has a YouTube political channel in Dutch, and he's from the Netherlands. Jürgen, it's great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Just to kind of get things started, can you give our audience a brief introduction about yourself?
Of course. Yeah, like the host said, my name is Jürgen Van Het Bulscher. I live in the Netherlands. I'm 22 years old. I study journalism, but I'm also pretty active on the side for myself. I'm starting up my own website. I'm growing my Twitter channel pretty fast, actually, and I post like political comments, stuff like that.
So you describe yourself overall more as a journalist. Do you post a lot of opinionated pieces and posts as well as in your YouTube channel?
Right now I do post mainly political tinted stuff, and I'd also have school assignments. I mostly don't post them on my YouTube channel unless they're like pretty good, and that's more like the journalism stuff.
What political figures would you describe as some of the core influences on your views?
I mostly got my political views myself by just like reading, listening, not really any official political figures, like politicians. So maybe some Dutch politicians. I don't know if you know the name Thierry Baudet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you do? Okay. Well, I'm surprised by that. Holland is a small country. What do you know about him?
I don't know a lot, but I do know the sort of how Geert Wilders was a much larger political figure, and the two different political parties. So I did some research. Baudet, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but Forum for Democracy is his party.
That's correct. It's kind of an inside joke how to pronounce his name. It's I believe it's French, and also with his name, there's a lot of different pronunciations. He was interviewed by a journalist on like national TV, and it was like a joking question, but all in good faith, of course. But yeah, that's correct. Geert Wilders is probably on immigration is the most right out of all the Dutch parties. I should say Forum for Democracy. It's a fairly new party. It started as a think tank in, I think, 2014 or 2015. And then they decided to become a political party in 2017. And that's when they first got elected. It was an impressive thing what they did. They got two seats out of 150, but they had a quite short campaign. So like a lot of people were surprised and impressed that they made like two seats.
So the Forum for Democracy, Baudet's party, that is fairly new. Is it a political rivalry, or are there any ideological differences between that new party and Wilders' Freedom Party?
There's some collaboration. There's not a lot of rivalry. They mostly still just exist side by side. There isn't like a special collaboration or something like that, but there isn't. You also can't really speak about a rivalry.
Is that party, is it viewed as more of a minor party? Like, what are the major parties in the Netherlands?
Yeah, so in the Netherlands, we have called the Polder Model. And it's the parliament, and you have a lot of different parties in the House of Representatives. I think in total you have 12 or 13. And the biggest one right now is called VVD. It's our Prime Minister, Mark Rutte. Like, especially after this corona crisis, they're huge, man. They're more than one third of the entire House of Representatives. So,
would that be the center left party?
That's center right. You can compare it to the Tories in England.
What is considered conservatism, or what is considered liberalism in different countries? Like, how would you describe what is considered conservatism in the Netherlands, and how would it contrast with, say, the UK Tories and or like the US Republican Party? And even within those divides, it gets more complex.
Yeah, I think the VVD, the biggest right now, they're right wing, but they're definitely not conservative. They're they're fiscally conservative, I would say. They're good for the economy, in all fairness, and big business. We have some Christian parties, the SGP.
So that's Christian Democratic Appeal.
Yeah, that's CDA. Yeah, that's also a pretty big one, actually. And we also have the ChristenUnie, Christian Union. Those are more socially conservative.
So one is more socially conservative and one's more economically.
Exactly.
And then also in Europe, I guess there is a divide between what is nationalism and what is conservatism. So I think a best example that I give would be I'm thinking about the last French election when it was François Fillon as a conservative versus Marine Le Pen's Front National.
Yeah. What's the question about that?
How significant is that divide? Because the way the U.S. media would describe things is we just have because we don't have a parliamentary system, we just have a sort of winner take all. So two-party system. So when people say the term nationalist, it might just be some right-wing people online who are supporting Trump. But in a lot of European nations, there are these sort of fundamentally there's overlap, but there are fundamentally different parties in a lot of cases.
Yeah, that's very much the case. You have Forum for Democracy, for example. They're very culturally conservative. At least that's how they present themselves. If you actually look at their policies, it's a little less than they present themselves as. Then you have the VVD, that's like I said, fiscally conservative. And PVV, these are all right-wing parties, by the way, I'm talking about right now. PVV is they're pretty right. They have some leftist policies, mainly fiscally, but they're mostly a one-issue party. And they're really focusing on Islamization and immigration.
And that's what, Wilders' party or Bade's party?
Yeah, PVV, the one-issue party, that's Geert Wilders, and Forum for Democracy's Thierry Baudet. And those are the right-wing parties. And then you have the left-wing parties. CDA is still in the middle, maybe a little bit to the center. Then you have DSSS, the D66, Democrats 1966 is the full name. They're center-left, but creeping much more left lately. You have GroenLinks, the green left, and all the way to the Socialist Party, which would probably surprise a lot of Americans.
How strong of an interest or expertise in the details of the other neighboring nations' politics? So what are comparisons with the British, French, or the German political scene? And do you have any strong connections to nations outside of the Netherlands?
No, that's actually kind of a shame that we don't really have that in Europe. And that's one of the things I'm actually focusing on my website, is trying to establish that connection, because we have a lot of We have the same issues in almost every Western European nation. And those things are the European Union, immigration, and climate policies.
Sure, I think the term like right can be overly simplistic, but then what is the key focus point? Because then you have these different groups, because you have people who describe themselves as nationalists, but they may be more to the left on economics or the environment, and then people who are conservative, who are more focused on less regulations, and then there is a kind of an argument that, or a lot of conservatives, a critique against the U.S. Republican Party, that they might put free markets before the nation's interest, cutting taxes on and deregulating tech companies that deplatform right-leaning people. How much do those tensions between those two groups factor in?
Yeah, that fits in nicely into what I just said, the Polder model, having this broad spectrum of different parties. There's a party for everyone, or there's a party for no one. For example, like I said, you have VVD, that's Mark Rutte, he's socially liberal and fiscally conservative. But because of that, you have new parties, and that's the Forum for Democracy, that sets in a new course for nationalism and social conservatism as well.
We're also thinking about economic policy because, in the case of Germany, their main party now is AfD, Alternative für Deutschland.
What do you mean by main party?
I mean, not so much, not their main party, but their main, what would be described as nationalist or right-leaning.
Yeah.
And then there used to be NPD is still an official party, but it's very, very small. And NPD is considered more on the nationalist spectrum, they're considered more to the right, but actually on economics, they're actually to the left of AfD.
Yeah, and that's the same with AFFA, Party for Freedom. They're fiscally quite left, but their main right wing focus is anti-immigration and anti-Islamification. I asked you, what do you mean by main party? Because CDU from Merkel is still the biggest, if I'm correct.
So Merkel's party was initially considered a center-right, and I don't know if you would say comparable, how comparable to the Netherlands Christian Democratic Party, but a lot of people were really upset with her with the whole migrant crisis several years ago.
You have it in France, you have it in, not really Belgium, but you have it in France, Holland, and Germany, that it's fiscally right-wing parties that are in power right now, and but not so much socially conservative.
What is the immigration situation in the Netherlands, the political aspect of that, and also recent trends? Is it more, do you say, more tied to the refugee angle, or is there more of a sort of push for cheap labor?
I would say both. A lot of people are starting to wake up that immigration isn't all dandy. There are some big consequences to it. I'm very immigration critical. Increasingly more people with me, but at the same time, I still speak a lot of people who are either for immigration or opposed to immigration, but they don't really know what the consequences are for their nation.
And as far as recent trends, are the overall numbers still increasing, levels of immigration?
Yeah, they are, and that ties into the right-wing parties, springing up all over the EU. That started 3 years ago, 4 years ago, simultaneously with the rise of Trump and when Brexit happened and stuff. but it is still the it is still right wing, fiscally conservative parties in power, and yeah, they don't really like during election times. I'm speaking for Holland now. During election times, a lot of right wing parties they say in their program that they're going to be more critical on immigration, but then like in Mark Rutte's case, he sets immigration record after immigration record. So yeah, that's kind of a conflicting message.
Oh yeah, it's been the same case. It's been the same case with Republicans in the United States using it as a sort of campaign wedge issue. But then once getting elected, there's not much of a change. I mean, there is some change recently, but the thing is, like, that's more because of the pandemic and the ongoing economic crisis. If it wasn't for that, the whole pandemic, I don't think there would be, even under Trump, I don't think there would have been as dramatic of a change.
Yeah, I heard he closed the HB1 visa immigration, like he ended that altogether.
Yeah, I mean it's not a permanent end, but it's a temporary freeze, which
temporary.
I mean that's still a pretty big deal, but that's primarily for tech workers.
Yeah, but did you hear that at first Jared Kushner that he blocked it, or he convinced him to water it down?
Oh yeah, I did hear something like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I think Trump's base is pretty happy that he actually did it after all.
What is the overall political divide in the Netherlands? Is it primarily just urban versus rural, or is the southern region more conservative?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. This is, in my opinion, what you kind of see all over the globe, that more developed parts and mainly cities, that they're more left-wing. And it's the same in Holland. We call it the provinces versus the Randstad, because all our cities are like at the ocean, not the ocean, the Noorderzee, the Northern Sea. So we call it the Randstad, and like the more rural regions, they're the provincie, the provinces. And yeah, there is definitely a big divide between those two areas. And then as well, I would say between age groups and also ethnicities.
So younger people are generally more liberal, and people from immigrant backgrounds are also more liberal. Are there more complexities than that?
It's not that complex, because what you see in my generation is that they're either pretty far right, or they're pretty far left. And what pushes my generation pretty far left, my generation being Generation Z, the Zoomers, what pushes them to the left is like humanitarian crises and also the climate. Like they want to do a lot about the climate. And what pushes people from my generation to the right is like the European Union and the immigration crisis. Yeah, since I recently moved to Amsterdam, half a year ago, I don't know if it was recently, but it's very interesting because, like I said, the cities here are pretty left. Amsterdam has a left-wing mayor, but it's funny because even though they are very left-wing, most ethnic Dutch people I speak, they actually vote like the most right you can, like PVV. So, and that tells me a lot.
Yeah, Anatoly Karlin, I don't know if you know who he is, on UNS, he made a similar point that's interesting, a fascinating point about, he was talking about the Polish elections, but implies to a lot of situations. So with older generations, like boomers and probably Gen X, yeah, the kind of trend, like we're with older generations, there's a strong center left and a strong center right. It does seem that younger people, both Zoomers and Millennials, like there's much stronger polarization.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely the case. And in my opinion, it's only going to get worse, the polarization, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's a trend here as well. Is Netherlands significantly more liberal than its neighbors, or about the same?
I think because of our polar model, we are more left-wing than we need to be. because for the last 12 years, Mark Rutte has been in power, and like I said, he's definitely on the right on the spectrum. But he was forced to work with like either center or left wing parties. So all in all, we could be more right wing, but in the end, we are like kind of the same. We are on the same place on the political spectrum as the other countries in the European Union. I do want to note, by the way, that although PFFA and Forum for Democracy, they get a lot of shit by the media, it isn't as bad as in France, Sweden, and Germany.
Yeah, the kind of opposition from the media, or there's the whole issue of like kind of deplatforming and like attacks on free speech. So when it comes to things like freedom of expression, you would say there's more freedom of expression than the UK, Sweden, or France?
I would think in Holland, you get like tickets and you get arrested less quickly than than in the rest of the European Union, because you saw that Count Dankula got arrested for making his pug doing a Nazi salute.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was a few years ago. Yeah. We have a saying, it's Dutch people are nuchter, it means like sober. Yeah, Dutch people are way too sober to arrest people for that, you know?
Germany, they're also like their history is, I mean, they have a different history, so that's going to be a factor. But like political correctness is, I mean, it's hard to say, but it might be worse in other places. UK especially has gotten really bad. It does, like, it seems like with the whole protests, like the UK seems the most impacted
by the Black Lives Matter protest.
Yeah, also like the push to take down statues. I mean, it has impacted other countries as well, but I think the UK seems to be like the focal point of that.
You mean next to the United States?
The focal point for Europe. Yeah, this kind of map that shows like globally like where the highest concentrations are. The George Floyd protest.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the United States, followed by England, and after that France, and then maybe Sweden. Is that what the map said?
I forget, but Anatoly Karlin on OWNs, he made an interesting observation that places with the highest concentration of protests also tend to have a stronger American influence.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting point. Maybe it could also be tied to like the amount of the immigrant population. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's probably a factor too.
I think that's a larger factor than the amount of American influence, in my opinion, because like with these protesters, like they see like France, for example, these people they see these protests happening on the television and on Twitter and stuff, but so do people in England. You know, would be more tied to the immigrant population.
Yeah, it's probably a combination of both. So like in the UK, you saw people from immigrant backgrounds, but also a lot of British people supporting the movement as well.
Yeah.
I saw this post on Twitter that you posted, and about removing statues. So it showed the police guarding the statue. It's of a figure from the Dutch East India Company.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was a beautiful, picture. But yeah, I thought that was like, I thought it was a nice picture, because you don't really see like police defending like the statues in the UK or the States. So I thought it was pretty awesome that the police was actually doing that here. Like they're actually defending their government property.
Yeah, for sure. Trump did put out an executive order about prosecuting like those who destroying the statues. But the thing is there's different, a lot of people are disappointed with Trump's handling, like from his original supporters. The thing is the way the United States works is there are separations of power, and a lot of powers go to the local jurisdictions and the cities and the states. So yeah, I mean, that's a factor, but there probably is more Trump could do. But I know like Boris Johnson, I think he's done a pretty really poor job handling this.
I think Boris Johnson is still mainly focusing on the corona crisis. So I don't think he's really worried about the whole Black Lives Matter protests, like either rooting for them or supporting the statues and stuff. I think he's still mainly focused on the corona crisis because England got hit pretty hard.
What has been the general response to the George Floyd protests in the Netherlands?
We had a few peaceful protests. I think they've ended now. A few anti-racism groups are in talks with our prime minister Mark Rutte. But like I said, Dutch people, we're a sober people. We're like a lot of boomers are just laughing at them, and but a lot of people are taking them serious because of their numbers. Like I said, they have a seat now. They have the ear of our prime minister. But from the general population, it's not much. I would call it a sober response. But one sec, I just pulled up the tweet. Yeah, I just have to say this, man. Yeah, so there's a picture of Dutch special police forces protecting a statue of a man named Jan Pieterszoon Koen. And he was an officer in the Dutch East India Company, which was a spice trade, like a big spice trade the Hollanders had during the 17th century. And yeah, it's a pretty cool picture that you actually see like special police protecting the statue.
Yeah, I mean, that is remarkable. They were in Washington, D.C., so there was a statue of Andrew Jackson that was being protected. So, I mean, because that was like right near, that was in the center of D.C., so that was important. But I'd say overall, there's been few cases like that.
Was it protected by the police?
Yeah, there were police there. There was a situation, it wasn't with police, but there was some Italian-American, a group of Italian-Americans protecting the Columbus statue in Philadelphia. That.
Yeah, and even Trump reacted on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We love our Italians.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You have a YouTube channel, but it's, there aren't any English videos, it's exclusively in Dutch. Can you talk about what you're doing, with that, what kind of interviews you've conducted?
Yeah, we mentioned our YouTube channel. It has 2 subscribers right now. I'm not posting regularly. I originally made it for school, for my studies, to post my interviews on and stuff. And I think I just posted 2 interviews for myself. One with a Dutch politician and one with a Danish politician. So I'm really just getting started. And I don't really know what I want to do yet with my YouTube channel. Because, yeah, if I want to grow, I need to do it regularly.
The interview with the politician from Denmark, that was on the pandemic. And then the one, the Dutch member of parliament, that was Martin van Helvert of the Christian Democratic Party. Wasn't that about South Africa?
It was about South Africa. Also, military cooperation with the United States. I had an hour conversation with him. And it was just kind of an interview to quickly show what we were talking about.
And what was his general stance? So this was with U.S. military. Was this in regards to the decision, like Trump talking about pulling troops out of Germany?
Yeah, what he mainly told me was, about the decision to pull the troops out of Germany to like pressure Europe to spend more money on defense, but also that. A lot of people only see Trump's tweets, but that's nothing compared to the actual process that goes into these decisions. And that he told me how the process goes about about him conferencing with the American Senate members, and he mainly told me about the process, how that went.
With South Africa, was this specific legislation? I think the subject matter was it like land appropriation?
Yeah, it's like kind of a shame because it's pretty terrible what's happening in South Africa. Like if you want to talk about racist killings, look at South Africa. And I originally came into contact with Martijn van Helvert because of Twitter, because I saw that he was he's actually one of the few politicians who actually is like fighting for the Boeren in South Africa. And maybe not a lot of people do this, but they're basically Dutch descendants. Afrikaners and the Boeren, they're basically Dutch descendants. So I was pretty happy to see that finally some politician is like at least aware of the whole situation there.
Yeah, I mean, Britain has connections as well, but how strong are the ties between those two nations?
So you have an English population. My girlfriend is from South Africa. She's English. But then you also have the Afrikaners. They actually speak a language that's, it's literally called Afrikaans. And it's very close to Dutch. And they're, like the most of them, they live in rural areas. And like they're all Dutch descendants.
Did you follow the whole thing with John Bolton's new book?
I picked up on it. Did it get released or?
Someone did post like an excerpt online.
But it also wasn't court, right? If it could be released.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the issue, is still being disputed in court. But the news leaked out that like John Bolton was pressuring Trump to take a more aggressive stance on Iran, and then Trump kept changing the subject matter to like the land appropriation in South Africa.
Yeah, he distracted the.
Yeah, that's what Bolton was alleging. Or Trump even said something. Well, Bolton alleged that Trump said that he wanted to grant them like a refugee status.
Yeah, I think I've heard that. Yeah, and also England, they passed some special legislation to allow the 3 million people in Hong Kong to move to England. They could do the same with the people in South Africa.
I would support Trump doing that, but with the Netherlands, definitely, there's like a stronger tie.
Yeah, exactly. I think Holland and England should be kind of more responsible. You know, like it used to be a Dutch colony. No, not a Dutch colony, but it just had a lot of Dutch settlers. But it used to be an English colony.
With South Africa, is it discussed in the news, or it seems to be not like back all. In the 80s, it was. During the whole like anti-apartheid movement, it was a big issue. Yeah, it's really brought up in the news.
Not at all. It's not at all mainstream. It's very low-key.
And with the United States, what are your general thoughts of the influence, the impact of the United States, NATO, and the G8 on Europe?
I think after the Second World War, Europe relied on America a lot for military support, but I think that should be over now. I think Europe should build their own armies, like invest more in them. And I don't think that's a fact. America is pressuring Europe a lot to do that through the G8 and the G8 and NATO. And I think that's a good thing.
With a lot of this woke ideology, how much of it do you think is from the American media, and how much of it was from existing like European intellectuals?
Yeah, so I think the extreme right is much bigger in the United States, but so is the extreme left, like literal communists, stuff like that, revolutionaries. I think there are some people like that in Europe, but they mainly came out to protest when they saw shit was going down in America.
Overall, like, what direction do you see Europe heading politically? Do you see the left stronger, like the center left, the center right, or do you see it more both the polar ends growing?
Both of the polar ends are growing, but I think the right is growing a little bit faster. But yeah, like mainstream parties right now, they lucked out because of the corona crisis. It got a lot of extra support because of it.
With the corona crisis, it seems like the whole... In the United States, it's a very... I mean, there is a very strong political divide where you have... where Republicans have taken more... So basically the Democrats have supported stronger lockdowns, and the Republicans have supported reopening for economic reasons. And there were these protests a couple months ago where there were conservatives protesting the lockdown. But, I mean, it does seem a little bit like the divide in Europe is a little bit more complex because, like, Viktor Orban in Hungary took a very strong, like, he's more right-wing and he took a strong stance. And then Sweden, in some ways, is more liberal, but they took a more relaxed stance. So, I mean, where you are in the Netherlands, like, how much of that issue is, with the COVID pandemic, how much of it is politically polarized?
So it's not really, it's not actually that polarized because we never went into lockdown that hard. Like our restaurants and stuff like that closed down for a little, for 2 months, I think, but it's all back to business now. We are keeping like 6 feet distance, stuff like that. But our government at the beginning took a stance. And they made it clear to the public that that stance was just listening to the experts and doing what they say. And in the beginning, as for, like the right-wing parties, they really took their chance to like criticize the government. So did left-wing parties, by the way. But the right-wing parties, so PVV and FVD, they really overdid it. But after that, I feel like most parties fell in line and started to support the Mark Rutte more and more.
Yeah, with the United States, it seems Europe. It was really bad for a while, but it seems like the curve has been flattened, as they would say. And in the United States, it seems to be the situation is still pretty bad.
Yeah. Just before I came on, I was reading some tweets, and like people are actually surprised that that America's getting a second peak and. Like everybody's asking why and how, and they're blaming Trump. But to me, it seems obvious. Like for the past like month, entire cities have been rioting, and I've read an article that these events are like super spreaders because of like tear gas, people coughing on each other because of it. So I think that's the reason why America got a second wave, and why we haven't seen a second wave in Europe yet.
A lot of the media won't even bring up that issue about the protests and the contribution to the pandemic. So there were reopenings, and kind of coincidentally, the reopenings happened in close proximity to when the protests did. That means that the people who were defending the protests from concerns of contributing to the pandemic, they can just rely on saying that the reopenings... the reopenings were a factor. The thing having these kind of a long-term, like, cyclical lockdowns, it's not economically unsustainable, but if the virus gets out of control, that will have a disastrous economic impact as well. Some countries Asian countries especially, but I think, also New Zealand, like, they took really strong measures in the very beginning, but they were still able to do well. What was the interview? It was in Dutch, but can you kind of explain the content of the interview with the political figure from Denmark and what he was explaining? Because, Denmark did take a stricter stance compared to other nations, but they've actually ended up doing pretty well.
Yeah, well, that interview... Well, I want to talk about one point you made, that people could use the argument about America opening up again, that being a factor to the new spike in corona cases. But a counter-argument to that is, like, just look at Europe. They opened up again as well, and they're not getting a second peak. And, the interview was about... a recent law that got passed in the Danish parliament that handed the power to the government to mandatory vaccinate all their citizens. It was mainly about that. It wasn't so much about the pandemic, but more about that law.
It's hard to say because some nations, like there have been some nations that have recovered, and they have a second wave that's smaller. So that did happen in South Korea. To some degree, so like other than what happens is they're able to successfully clamp down on the virus. What happens is if they don't adequately control the flow of people, like tourists or immigrants or whatever coming in from other countries, like some nations could get reinfected. So, like, right now, the European Union is banning travel from the United States.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, you also saw in that they had a second wave in Iran.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I personally think Europe isn't going to get a second wave, at least Holland, because of how we handled it. Like, we have a very, very low amount of new infections per day. And, like, all the measurements we have in restaurants, we have disinfecting. We can only have so many people inside. All the tables have to be 1.5 meters away from each other. So, yeah, I don't know if we're going to get a second wave. I doubt it, personally.
We're getting closer to the end of the show. Is there anything about any, like, notable political issue you'd like to comment on?
There isn't any notable issue I want to talk to, but I think we should spend our last few minutes on, like, the differences between political ideologies in the States and Europe. We were talking a little bit on Twitter about, in DMs, about, like, how being a liberal conservative is different in which part of the world you are, you know?
Yeah, that's true, and also labels get, they get confusing, because, like, I talked about conservatism versus nationalism, but I actually do see the same divide on the left between, like, socialism versus neoliberalism. I see that conflict as well. How much do you observe that trend in Europe? Is there, so, like, a socialist would be someone who says we should redistributing the wealth away from corporations, and then neoliberal would be someone who defends a lot of corporate policies for the most part, as long as they're more woke, and there's maybe more, like, they're the ones supporting a cancel culture. So do you have that same dichotomy in Europe?
Yeah, a little bit. And also, I want to say that, like, saying you're communist or socialist, like, in the last 10 years, it used to be, like, totally unacceptable socially, right, in the States?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's socialism, describing yourself as a socialist, has become a huge trend. So that's a major trend.
You had the whole Red Scare in the States. But over here, we have, like socialist, they call themselves socialist parties. I think they're still capitalist, but they're, like, really focusing on the fight against big business and standing up for the little guy, which I do support. I think it's very nice. So, but if someone would, like, describe themselves as a socialist or communist in the States, they mean they're literally a communist.
As far as your views, labels can be confusing. Like, would you say you're closer to maybe, like, paleoconservatism?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. When I speak with someone who's, like, very much into politics, I say I'm a paleoconservative, and like, to the general people, I'd say, like, I'm right wing, I'm conservative. Yeah, there aren't a lot of people who are that far into political theory, not even the politicians themselves. And that, again, it's funny, but it ties into the Dutch soberness.
Just looking at looking at different political ideologies, like, they kind of go in a circle. So you could start at
I've heard of a theory that it's like a circle.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of the order. So you kind of have MAGA Trump supporters. Then from there you have, like, a generic conservatism, establishment neocons. Centrism, kind of neocons in there. Then the center left, like neoliberalism, like Clinton, Obama, Joe Biden. And then from there, then you would get maybe the kind of, I guess,
Bernie Sanders.
No, let me see. Like, there's probably somewhere in between, like maybe Elizabeth Warren and AOC. Then from there, you would get Bernie Sanders. But then from Bernie Sanders, you would get to, like, maybe someone who just would be, like, to the third position, or to kind of, like a radically anti-establishment center. And then from there, you would end up back at, like, paleoconservatism. So you can make, like, a full circle.
Yeah, I've heard that's only, like, a theory. I think the further left you go won't necessarily mean you're going to end up at paleoconservatism again. Because if you look at like the farthest left you have right now in the United States, which would be like communist revolutionaries, what's farther left than that?
Yeah,
maybe the horseshoe theory
that's
more applicable.
I'm thinking of. Are you familiar with this kind of concept of like third position, where dissident elements of the right overlap with like dissident elements of the left? Like it's sort of similar to the horseshoe theory.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe I've had conversation about this. I think the right and the left, like the far right and the far left, it could be buddies, but like there's only like two or three topics that are really keeping them apart. You know, like you said, like a lot of dissidents and third positionists, they are in favor of like a big welfare state, and they're like anti-big business, stuff like that.
Yeah, with paleoconservatism, they're not as enthusiastic about free markets as like a Reaganite, but they're not third position either. They represent a kind of middle ground between those two.
Yeah, that's true. Paleoconservative, we are definitely capitalists, but yeah, we just want everyone to be to fit in, and we want everybody to be all right. We want a welfare state so that people won't slip through the cracks. And for a lot of people, that's also where religion comes in. A lot of, like a huge amount of paleoconservatives are also religious, way more so than like neocons or regular conservatives. And that also ties into that, just wanting to take care of everybody.
Well, they might advocate like the church or the community providing, taking care of people and looking out for people. Idealistically, that would work better. I can understand like the argument for like a basic income if you just have a bunch of people who are just acting purely as individuals competing to get jobs with a corporation, like kind of liberal neoliberal capitalism versus a more model of like close-knit communities, strong church, and like small businesses.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid describing.
And you have a website. Is this up now, or it's an ongoing project you're working on?
Yeah, that's pretty great that you brought this up. Yeah, it's ongoing. It's not yet up. It's called GenRen Z. It's an abbreviation for Generation Renaissance. I'm trying to unite the right wing Zoomers, because as you probably know, the Generation Z is more conservative than the previous one, the millennials. And I kind of want to bank in on that momentum and like just unite everyone and give us a voice.
So is this a Dutch language site, or is it international?
It's going to be international eventually. Like I said earlier, it's a shame that that people across Europe don't really have contact with each other. They don't communicate a lot. Which is a shame, because we face the same issues. So yeah, I want to unite all the young people in Europe.
Jürgen van Het Bulscher, it has been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you very much, Robert.